is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday. Bernie was going to be with us for the first hour, and then he got this invitation to go speak to the Urban League down in Florida. And I think he spoke about an hour ago, and he's on a plane back to Vermont right now. So we have many promises from Bernie's folks that he will be on next week. So my apologies. We have no brunch with Bernie today, which means you're stuck with me. But I've got a couple things I want to rant about here, and but it's Anything Goes Friday, anything in the middle of Anything Goes Summer, so feel free to call in on whatever's on your mind, and we can talk about, you know, I mean, there's a world of issues out there. I'm going to start with a few. Number one, how Democratic candidates are running their campaigns. I've only heard from the Sanders campaign and the Clinton campaign, and I guess I have to go to the other campaigns and sign up and say contact me, because apparently they don't have a press list and they're not pushing things out to progressive media, as far as I know. You know, being progressive media right here. But anyhow, you'll recall last week the big way that the Clinton campaign was saying send us money was enter a lottery, basically, to have lunch with Hillary. This week, I mentioned this a couple days ago, if you send even $1 to the Hillary Clinton campaign, which, of course, puts you on the donor list, you know, so that they know that you're capable of it and you can give money in the future. And by the way, none of this is criticism. If you send even $1, you get what looks like a credit card that says, or, you know, it doesn't look like a credit card, but the same size as a credit card, which says Hillary supporter, and it's got a nice picture of Hillary on it, and it's got your name on it and the date that you made your donation. And so today I got an email from Cory Booker. Friend, I'm so excited for Hillary Clinton to be the next president of the United States. I've endorsed her. I'll do whatever I can to help her win the White House. And now I've signed up to get my official Team Hillary supporter card. Call me a nerd, but I'm excited about that, too. You can get your supporter card, too, for a limited time only. Chip in $1 before midnight to get yours in the mail. Now, then, to his credit, I mean, this, because my complaint about the previous Clinton emails was that they were basically issue free, and I'm really concerned that if she's going to run her campaign issue free, she's going to have a hard time beating any Republicans if she's the nominee. So Cory Booker goes on to write, I love having conversations with people about why I support Hillary. I'm looking forward to taking my supporter card out of my wallet and talking about Hillary's views on issues like immigration and criminal justice reform, where she really gets issues that disproportionately affect young people and people of color. You're here standing with Hillary from the beginning, so I want you to have your own supporter card to show off to your friends and family. Don't miss out! Chip in $1 before midnight tonight to get your limited edition supporter card. I'll bet it'll make you smile every time you see it. The website is, by the way, hillaryclinton.com/supporter-card, if you would like to get one. My concern is that this is not how you energize your base. Now, maybe it is. I mean, maybe I'm not a political consultant. I'm just a political observer and pundit, I guess you'd say, an author. But it just doesn't seem to me like this is how you win either a primary or a general election. On the other hand, she's keeping her head down. She's being cautious. She's going ahead, and she's hanging on to a 55% lead and easily beating most Republicans. So maybe her strategy is the right one. I mean, I could be completely wrong on this. I'm very impressed by Bernie's strategy. I got an email the other day that had something like 15 different policy positions in it. Each one just a couple of sentences, but there they were. We know where this guy stands. So fascinating stuff. Okay, a couple other things here. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that China is trying to rewrite the rules, not just of the internet in China, but all over the world. Now, we know that the Republican Party is largely in bed with the whole China business thing, right? Republicans have championed legislation. Virtually all of the so-called free trade agreements have been pushed overwhelmingly by Republicans and only marginally supported by Democrats, even though, you know, some of the largest ones were signed by a Democratic president. It was over the opposition of his own party. That was, you know, Bill Clinton. And I would predict the same would happen with Barack Obama. Is, you know, the Democratic Party as a whole is saying no to this stuff. So the Republicans are all in with China being the factory floor of America and Americans no longer having good paying manufacturing jobs. Are the Republicans also all in with China rewriting the rules of the internet so that big corporations or big governments, in the case of China, actually the two are interchangeable. Many of the very, very large corporations in China are state-owned or partially state-owned industries, and all of them exist with the sanction of the state. Now, American corporations exist with the sanction of the state as well. You have to file corporation papers, incorporation papers, with the Secretary of State in the state in which you're incorporating. But that has... that's interesting. Just got bumped out of the chat room. Hope our internet's still working. I'm back in. Okay. That has some, you know, significant consequences. And so, you know, it's really sort of a rhetorical question, because if you look at the Republican right now, various Republican or Republican aligned groups have filed at least 10 lawsuits to overturn net neutrality here in the United States. Now, net neutrality basically means that the government has no control over the internet other than to say that individual internet service providers can't get between you and the website that you want to look at. That's it. I mean, there's an exception, I believe, for child porn, and there may be an exception for national security, but I don't think so. People are having no problem finding ISIS websites and things, you know, if the news stories are to be believed, and I think that they probably are. But this James Areti writing in the Wall Street Journal, as social media helped topple regimes in the Middle East and Northern Africa, a senior colonel in the People's Liberation Army of China publicly warned that an internet dominated by the U.S. threatened to overthrow China's Communist Party. Yi Zheng, and a Chinese researcher writing in the state-run China Youth Daily, said the internet represented a new form of global control, and the U.S. was a shadow presence during some of these popular uprisings. But Beijing had better pay attention. The fight for net neutrality is far from over here in the United States, because Republicans and the corporations who own them are working very, very aggressively to be able to allow internet service providers like Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, and the like to be able to say to you, your basic internet service, you know, $35 a month. But if you want news sites, that's an extra $10 a month. If you want to stream video like on YouTube or Netflix, that's an extra $20 a month. If you want to go to porn sites, that's an extra $30 a month. And whenever you try to hit any of those sites without having paid those extra fees, you'll get a blocked message. Sorry, you haven't paid your fee. It's just like on cable TV. If you try to go to Showtime or HBO and you haven't paid the premium for them, then, you know, you get this message. Sorry, you haven't paid for this. This is what the Republicans want. And, it's what the corporations who own the Republicans want, which is why the Republicans are working for it, and it's consistent with all those kind of things. Dick Cheney's former war profiteering company, Halliburton, which, by the way, has moved to Dubai. I don't know if you were familiar with that. Is suing veterans that Halliburton poisoned in Iraq, proving that there's no level of low Dick Cheney and his cronies will not go to. Halliburton-linked scum-sucking defense contractor KBR. Oh, this is not Halliburton. This is KBR. Is suing 12 Iraq veterans who had the audacity to seek and win $85 million in damages for the cancer they got from burn pit smoke. This by Abby Zimmet.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Over at commondreams.org. It's an astonishing story. Just an absolutely astonishing story. Anything goes Friday. Back with your calls after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Jim, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Lockport, Illinois. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, happy Friday, Tom.
Thank you. Happy Friday to you, too, Jim.
You know, Tom, with all these police shootings with our African-American brothers, and there seems to be another common thread that I think we overlook. Now, growing up as a kid, my father said the blue wall of silence. He said, you can't beat it. And we see that when a cop does something wrong, other cops perjure themselves to cover that cop.
Yeah, this happened most recently in Cincinnati. It also apparently has happened in most of these cases, actually, where black people have been killed.
Well, I think the best way to break that down, especially when, I don't know if you remember the Walter Scott incident down in South Carolina.
I remember it well.
All right, when the police officer ran back to get the taser to plant that by the body,
right.
There was another cop that came on scene. He was an African-American. How come he didn't speak up? And shouldn't he be charged with accessory to murder and also, you know, obstruction of justice?
I think he should be if it happened exactly the way you described it, which is consistent with my recollection of watching the bystander video. That bystander video is no longer available. It's whoever made it has now decided to sell it, so it's not widely available. But yeah, I agree with you, and I think the blue wall of silence is it's not about race. I had this conversation on the TV show the other day with I think it might have been we have a regular guest who's an African American former police chief or police officer here in Washington D.C. and I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, but basically his point was in the police department, when you're talking about police versus African American citizens or civilians as the police call us, it's not from the police point of view. With regard to them themselves, it's not white or black, it's blue. He said it's not white versus black people or black people versus black people. It's blue versus African Americans. So, exactly what you're saying.
Well, actually, that's the thing. He was standing over the body, over the dead body, when he brought that taser back and dropped it.
Right.
You know, to me, that's accessory to murder. I mean, it really is. And the way to break that wall down is you start charging these other cops that cover up, just like in this last case, you know, where they're lying about him being dragged. To me, the best way is to put the fear of God in them that they can be prosecuted as well.
Well, two of them have been suspended. I believe they've been suspended with pay, but, pending an investigation. But I think that there's now we're reaching this critical threshold, a tipping point, I believe, in American society, where we're saying enough already. We're tired of our cops showing up in tanks. We're tired of our cops showing up in Mutant Ninja Turtle outfits that look like something from the battlefield of Iraq. We're tired of our cops routinely killing people, particularly people of color, and brutalizing people with no consequences. And we're going to put an end to it. And you know, in Wisconsin, they did. It took 10 years for this this white couple whose son was killed by a police officer who was held unaccountable to get past the legislation in the state of Wisconsin. Actually, it was by ballot initiative. They worked and they got it on the ballot, and the people of Wisconsin voted for it. It said that no longer will prosecutors and grand juries be the ones who investigate police. It's going to be a completely independent body that has no affiliation with the police department or the prosecutor's office. And I think it's a great start. Jim, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. A couple other things I wanted to share with you. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Talk Media for the Sane Among Us is right now the Republicans are all hysterical about these Planned Parenthood videos. Here's the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is that abortion is legal in the United States. That radical breakthroughs in medical science have been made in the last few decades using fetal tissue from legal abortions. The vaccines for polio, for rubella, for chickenpox, new discoveries for the treatment of Parkinson's, muscular dystrophy, diabetes, all of these things have been done and are continuing to be done. There's an enormous amount of research that's being done using the fetal stem cells that are abundant in the tissue from aborted fetuses and the like. And in fact, in 1993, Congress, including Mitch McConnell, voted to legalize and in fact support the donation of fetal tissue for medical research. And it was a good, you know, it was for a good reason. Because, you know, we can solve some of these diseases. But now McConnell wants to defund Planned Parenthood, which doesn't provide abortion services. They refer out abortion services, God forbid. Not one penny of federal money is going for any kind of abortion services anywhere right now anyway. Which, frankly, I think is wrong. I think if abortion is legal and it's a medical procedure that a woman wants and she's covered by Medicaid or Medicare, she should be able to just go to a hospital and get an abortion. I'm getting quite frankly sick and tired of this argument where I'm kind of going halfway. I had this on TV a couple nights ago where I think it was Horace was going off on, all this abortion that Planned Parenthood is doing. And I was buying into the frame, basically. I said, abortion referrals and services and things are only 2 or 3% of Planned Parenthood's budget. And he's like, oh, it's a lot more than that. And I'm like, no, it's only 2 or 3%. What I should have been saying, as my wife pointed out to me when I got home that night, she's such a great producer. What I should have been saying is, I don't care if it's 50%, it's legal. If you don't want it to be legal, make it illegal. But as long as it's legal, and by the way, if you make it illegal, I mean, this is the other point that I would make, and I made this point last night on television as well, and I want to make it again here, although I pointed this out, I think, Monday of this week. I'm old enough to remember the 60s and 70s and things like date rape weren't even part of the lexicon. And if a woman was looking for a job, she had to look in the women wanted section of the help wanted ads in the newspaper. And all the good jobs were in the men wanted section, and the women wanted section were waitresses and secretaries. I mean, that was life in the 1960s and early 1970s. But in 1961, the first birth control pill was approved by the FDA for sale. And by 1965, it was widely available. And that produced the so-called sexual revolution. Suddenly people could have sex without worrying about pregnancy. And I was coming of age during that time. I was a teenager during those years in the late 60s. And I remember it quite well. And then in 1973, but even then, you know, women were getting pregnant. Even, you know, birth control is not 100% safe, and not every woman had access to birth control pills. And there were actually still some states like Connecticut where it was illegal for people to possess birth control. That law got knocked down, I think, in 65, Griswold versus Connecticut. So this all happened in the mid-60s, that women got control of their bodies, but they were still getting pregnant. But back then, at least when I was in high school, which was, you know, the mid-60s, had I graduated, it would have been class of 69. So we're looking at 67, 68, 66, you know, when I was in high school. I knew a number of women, girls, whatever you know, teenagers, who had what were then called D&C operations. I think it's dilation and curettage or something like that. It's basically they open up the uterus and scrape out the inside. And the ostensible reason for these were to deal with difficult menstrual periods. And apparently that technique does work for that. But the vast majority of them were really just abortions. I mean, that's how you do an abortion. That's one way to do an abortion. They were early stage abortions. But you had to have the money to be able to go to the hospital and pay for it. And so it was an upper middle class thing. And the women who didn't have the money, and there was one girl in my high school that just stopped coming to school, vanished. I mean, there were several who stopped coming to school when they got pregnant and had babies, but this one woman in particular had a coat hanger abortion and died. I didn't know her well, but I knew who she was. She just vanished. And anybody who was alive in the 60s, particularly if they were teenagers, like I was, can tell you similar stories. So, and then in 73, Roe v. Wade legalized abortion all across the nation, and they no longer had to do this sham of DNCs. And women now had complete control over their bodies. And what did we get out of that? The women's movement. And compare the number of women in the workplace now, or in college, in classes other than music or English. I mean, my mom told me she got a degree with honors from MSU in English. And I'm like, why English? Well, A, I love English, and B, I went to college to find a man to marry. Right? That's what. Now, this is in the 1940s. But by the 1970s, that, you know, it was no longer. It was like, you know, I'm going to go to college and become a CPA. I'm going to go to college and become a rocket scientist. I'm going to go to college and become a doctor. Because women had control over their own reproductive systems. They had control over their bodies, which meant that they had control over their fate and futures. And I'm telling you what, Mitch McConnell and these Republicans and the people who are doing these highly edited, very misleading videos want is they want to go back to the days of male supremacy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Where women are disempowered and living basically at the whim of men. It's a variation. Well, I'll get into the variation after the break and we'll pick up your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Okay, I said, and I'm going to pick up your calls in just a second here, but I said that as we were hitting the break, that this, what has been referred to as the Republican War on Women, I believe actually is. I think that they're trying to roll back women's rights. They want to go back to a time when, you know, dumb, barefoot, and pregnant. You know, this is, and by dumb, I mean not speaking, not smart. The variation on what St. Paul said, you know, women should cover their heads and keep their mouths shut in church. This Republican effort to destroy Planned Parenthood, and now the kind of apologistic pitch on this is the Republican effort to destroy Planned Parenthood when only 3% of what they do is abortion services. Well, like I said, I don't care if it's 50%. It's still a Republican effort to take away from women reproductive services, whether it's birth control, whether it's sexually transmitted disease screening, whether it's mammograms and breast cancer screening, or whether it's abortion. This Republican effort to defund Planned Parenthood and destroy the organization based on deceptively edited videotape that's basically just designed to gross us out. I mean, that's all it is. This is the same old campaign from 40 years ago when they would show up with pictures of babies and, you know, pickled aborted fetuses in jars. I got to stop referring to them as babies. Babies are things that get born. Is, in my opinion, an effort to marginalize and put back on the fringes of society the role of women in our society. This is male supremacy. And in particular, white male supremacy. By and large, that's where most of this is coming from. Now, I realize there's a large outreach to the African-American community being done by the anti-abortion movement and by the Republican Party to say, oh, the people who support abortion, they want genocide against the black race, right? Against African-Americans. No, it's not the case. I mean, it's so not the case that that's an obscene statement to make. This is all about women having control over their body. And I said, you know, this is very similar. It's a variation on other things. And one of the things it's a variation on is white male power over people of color. And another thing it's a variation on is the destruction of the middle class by Reaganomics. Now, why would these right wingers want the middle class destroyed? Why would the Republican Party want the middle class destroyed? Because if you have people who don't have the means to fight you back, who are, you know, economically terrified, who've got $50,000 in student debt, they're scared that if their credit score goes down another 20 points, they'll never get a job, they'll never be able to rent a house. I mean, we have created economic slavery in the United States over the last 30 years. And it's been done almost entirely by the Republican Party because it works to their advantage. So why are they now talking about abortion? Because they don't want to talk about their economics. This is, I mean, these are literally, they're called wedge issues for a reason. It's the wedge that they can drive into the electorate to peel off people to vote for Republicans who don't realize that the Republican Party wants to voucherize Medicare, which means Medicare now, instead of having the government pay the bills, you're going to have to go and on bended knee to a private for-profit health insurance company that's going to skim 20% off the top for the billionaire CEO's salary. Number one. Number two, they want to destroy Medicaid altogether. They won't even allow it to expand in most of the red states. Number three, they want to privatize Social Security. Take that $2.5 trillion trust fund. Let's give it to Pete Peterson and his hedge fund buddies. Pete Peterson has spent hundreds of millions of dollars over the years promulgating this myth that Social Security won't be here for you, young people. If you're under 40, forget it. It's not going to be. Well, that might be true if Pete Peterson has his way, but it's certainly not true the way the program's set up right now. So the Republicans want us talking about abortion instead of talking about the fact that they oppose the minimum wage. They don't just oppose raising the minimum wage. They oppose there even being one. That they oppose anybody having access to health care if it's paid for by the government. That they oppose people having access to food stamps if they're down on their luck. That they oppose people having access to any kind of housing support if they're down on their luck. That they oppose single mothers or families, for that matter, having access to free or low-cost child care during working hours so that they can work. That they oppose, you know, laws against wage theft. That they oppose, Republicans oppose laws that give consumers some say in the marketplace. Remember the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that Elizabeth Warren pretty much single-handedly created? Republicans totally against that. Why? Because it gives consumers power. They want us disempowered. Why is that? Once again, because disempowered people don't go out in the streets and protest. Don't even, you know, I mean, they don't have time to even show up and vote very often. The poorer somebody is, the less likely they are to vote. Why? Because they're working 30 hours a day. Well, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day, but you get my point. And they're not as well informed. Why? Well, you know, maybe they can't afford the internet. The newspapers have all been consolidated. It's just a handful of companies now that own virtually all of our major newspapers. And so you get this very homogenized news. The television networks tell us what they want us to know, not what we need to know. For example, this morning at MSNBC, I mentioned that, you know, Bernie's not with us today because he's down in Florida speaking at the Urban League. MSNBC carried a part of Hillary's speech to the Urban League live on the air. Then Bernie gets up to talk and they go, oh, yeah, Bernie Sanders is there, too. Let's go back to talking about Donald Trump. I'm serious. I sat with Louise and watched this morning. So anyhow, that's my rant for the day. I want to talk about, we'll do this later on in the program. I've got a bunch of other stories here. KBR, the Wall Street solution to the Puerto Rico problem. There's a new rocket drive that is astonishing, could transform. Oh, it's just, again, we'll get to that, too. But right now, let's pick up some phone calls. Let's see here. Norman in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Norman, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank God for Free Speech TV, and thank God for you. You've given me a first-rate education.
Thank you, Norman.
On what's really going on.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the legalized lynching that I see on my television set every day.
You're talking about white cops shooting unarmed black men?
That's right. I call it legalized lynching.
Yep. That's a good way to describe it.
And, you know, and I want to say this. Obama hit the nail on the head in 2008 when he talked about how people cling to their guns and their religion. He hit the nail dead on the head.
Right.
And I feel like, and I'm saying this as a general statement, that I'm no student of education of history, but what I've seen before my eyes is white folks have an inane something about them that just won't allow persons of color or anybody else to be equal. And the only equalizing force that white people have over anybody is the gun. They've always held on and cling to that Second Amendment is because the gun is the only equalizing force that white, I feel that white people have over anything.
And you know, the Norman, if I may, I wrote a piece, the Second Amendment was written to maintain the slave patrols. And it's absolutely true. If you go back and read the notes from the Virginia meeting where they ratified the Constitution, Patrick Henry was hysterical. He was the largest slaveholder in Virginia. The guy who said, give me liberty or give me death. He was the largest slaveholder in Virginia. And he was hysterical about the Constitution because in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, it gives Congress the power to create an army, to draft people, and it gives the president the power to, you know, pull up that army during times of emergency. And he was saying that if the opponents to slavery in the North get the White House and take control of Congress, they will have a war someplace, and they will call up all of our slaves, Patrick Henry speaking, and free them. And there was actually a precedent for that. George Washington had done it during the Revolutionary War, and in a very small scale. The British had done it on a very large scale. If you can escape your slavery, we will take you in our army. And so the Second Amendment was put into place to protect the slave patrols, specifically in Virginia, but also in North Carolina and in Georgia. Back to you, Norman.
Well, apparently the same still applies to this very day.
Yes.
And it's just a shame that our country, in so many ways, you know, I just turned 50, and in so many ways, over the past 30 years or so, I've seen this country revert back to things that I learned in school as being past history.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing history being relived on my television every day. Fox News, it's Pravda.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I well said, Norman. This is the result of the so-called Reagan Revolution. We were moving forward in a very good and progressive direction from the 1930s to the 1980s, and then Reagan came into power and literally put the brakes on and turned us around. And we are still in the era of Reaganism and Reaganomics. Norman, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Louisville. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Oh, by the way, there's an effort to arrest and deport this dentist now for shooting this lion. Interesting. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Oh, Tom, you know, we were talking the other day about that. I couldn't remember that law that was put into place about unions and how they could strike.
It was Taft-Hartley, wasn't it?
Taft-Hartley.
1947, yeah. I couldn't remember. Yeah. I was drawing a, you know, it was a brain fart. I was drawing a blank on it. I can usually, you know, pop Taft-Hartley right off the top of my head, but you scared it out of me. But, yeah.
Yeah, me too. We both had those farts.
Yep.
Yeah, that started weakening the unions. That gave the, you know, the powers to be.
Well, the main thing that Taft-Hartley did was it established the ability of an individual state to declare itself a so-called right to work for state. I call it right to work for less.
And
you know, the southern states, which had always been about cheap labor, they used to call it slavery, but it was cheap labor. Or you know, free labor, they immediately jumped on the bandwagon and said, yeah, we'll become right to work for less states. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, if you're an average working person in a right to work for less state, you make about $5,000 a year less than if you're an average person living in a union state. It's real simple. And you're more likely to die on the job. You're less likely to have benefits. I'm sorry, Corky, I interrupted you.
What people don't realize was when Roosevelt came in, we were very close to revolution because we were just coming out of that long, drawn-out recession.
Depression. Yeah.
So he allowed unions to flourish, which gave the middle class hope. Well, the unions started to flourish. Well, the Republicans at that time had to do something to slow them down, so they passed this tap early.
Right, and Harry Truman vetoed it three times, and they overrode his veto every time.
Yes, exactly. I tell you exactly how long that the Republicans have been married to big money.
Yeah. And by the way, you said that, Corky, you said that the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act of 1935, gave the middle class some security. I would slightly recalibrate that statement. It created the American middle class. In the 1920s and 1930s, the vast majority of American working people were the working poor. There was a very small middle class in the United States. It was mostly doctors and lawyers and small business owners. That was the middle class. But working people, people who worked in factories, they did not make enough money to own a house. They did not make enough money to take a vacation. They did not have enough money to put their kids through college. We were the working poor. And what unionization did is it literally created the American middle class between 1935 and 1980. And then Reagan started taking apart the middle class because the middle class was getting troublesome. You had the women's movement, you had the gay rights movement, you had the civil rights movement, you had the Hispanic rights movement, you had the Native American rights movement, you had young people saying, hell no, I'm not going to go to Vietnam. I mean, all this stuff came out of the fact that there was a certain level of security and power among working people. They were the middle class, whereas before they hadn't been. And the whole Republican strategy, and it was laid out in 1951 in Russell Kirk's book, The Conservative Mind, the whole Republican strategy is to take that middle class and turn them back into a working class. And by working class, Republicans mean poverty wages. And that's why they don't want to raise the minimum wage. Corky, thank you for the call. Always insightful comments. We'll be right back 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Elaine in Long Island, New York. Hey, Elaine. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I called in, love your show all the time, by the way, and I called in because I had a personal experience with a terminated pregnancy when I was 19. Mm-hmm. And I need to make it very clear. This was a choice that I talked to my mother about, my own doctor. I went to the hospital with them to do this, and it was not very exciting. I don't think anybody that I knew and know is pro-abortion. I just wanted to let you know because I was also afraid of having the clinics at the time when and the back alley abortion things, and I was not upset about the decision. I was 19. I knew the boyfriend I was with was not going to be with me. He was offering to pay for it, but fortunately he didn't have to. I just find it very amazing that my husband found on the Daily Kos this morning, and I just found it in case you need to look it up. The Catholic nun explains pro-life in a way that will stun many, especially Republican lawmakers. And she says, I'll just read a little bit of it. I do not believe that just because you're opposed to abortion that makes you pro-life. In fact, I think in many cases your morality is deeply lacking. If all you want is a child born but not a child fed, not a child educated, not a child housed. And she goes on and on. But I think it's very important to put that out there, that as somebody who had this done, I didn't want to do this. This wasn't something I said, hey, I'm going to do this, yay, and all that. It was a calculated decision based on the fact that we didn't have money and the person was not going to be with me.
Yeah, and so, which makes perfect sense, and it's not an uncommon thing, Elaine, and there's all this mythology and all these horror stories and all this other kind of nonsense around it that's been put out by these right-wingers. But mostly, I would say that the Republicans do not want to talk about economics. They don't want to talk about Paul Ryan's, you know, pushing Granny off the cliff. They don't want to talk about their plans for Social Security. They don't want to talk about their plans to roll back any sort of national health care plan. And so they are going to focus on abortion from now until a year from November, and so that they can ride this wedge issue to an electoral victory. And
yeah. If it's any consolation, it's a little off topic, but it is a woman's topic. I told Danielle, who I also love to watch too and listen to her when you're not on, that I didn't know if any woman out there was aware that until 1973, a married woman could not get a credit card without her husband's permission.
You're right.
So women's rights are still and have been always an issue. And my grandmother was a public health nurse, which is now no longer. They went, I think they changed to like Dominican Sisters and stuff. But she was so, so progressive for her age, and she died in 1990 at 90 years old. I think of her a lot, and I just wish that things were different. But the Daily Kos article is something you should read.
I've already read it. I read it, and I thought that nun's comments were brilliant. She's as you read, and then she continued to say, you know, if you're not in favor of the essence of life, basically, if you're not in favor of feeding, housing, educating, clothing these kids once they're born, then you're pro-birth, you're not pro-life. And that was her point.
And in fact, I'd say
you're pro-forced birth, forced pregnancies.
Yes. And one last thing before I let you go to other callers. Matthew 25, I'm not a practicing Catholic as I used to be, but Matthew 25, if you're familiar with that, like I know you are, it's extremely personal for me. So thank you for all you do, and I wish any woman out there facing this abortion decision will just know that her other sisters are with her.
There you go. Elaine, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Jesse in Miami. Hey, Jesse. Thomas Paine in the 30-year mortgage?
Oh, yeah. we was talking about Henry George before. This is fall right in with it. If Thomas Paine had a solution to you paying a 30-year mortgage, just imagine you just paid 29 years, your job leave the country, you're out of work, and then you're out on the streets. After paying for 29 years of mortgage, maybe 20 years of it, you're just paying interest alone. And then you paid all the – everything is on time, but then 1 year you're in trouble, your job done went to China. You can't. Your unemployment don't run out, and you left hanging. What do you think Thomas Paine would do with something like that? A public bank?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, Thomas Paine proposed that every person, when they're born, have basically a trust fund established for them. This was a variation on basic minimum income for everybody. That by the time that they're 18 or 20 years old, would be large enough that they could get a stipend off the interest. And so everybody would have a basic minimum income. He also proposed Social Security. He also proposed national health care. This is all in a booklet of Thomas Paine's that's not as well known as Common Sense. This one is called Agrarian Justice. And it's an absolutely brilliant analysis. And Paine was a very, very, very progressive guy. He was also an atheist, which is why he ended up, you know, when he died, only seven people showed up for his funeral. He was kind of... because America was going through a religious revival in the early parts of the 19th century. But, yeah, Paine was a good guy, Jesse, and he had all this stuff figured out. Thanks a lot for the call. Excellent one. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Norma, we have 1 minute to the end of the hour. It's yours.
Well, first of all, our Bernie party was great. Everybody took pictures of my Bernie bear.
Great.
And everybody signed up. Okay, but whatever happened to no glove, no love? Montgomery right now is also having problems with STDs. But women do not get pregnant by themselves. Here in Alabama, we have a deadbeat law. Somebody needs to explain to these guys that you do have 18 years of child support if this woman has the baby. 18 years. It doesn't matter how old you are.
Right.
You've got 18 years to take care of that child, and in some states, you're going to pay for the kid to go to college. Nobody is talking about the guys' participation in getting women pregnant.
You know, if we amped those laws up, Norma, so that the men could not escape that liability in any way, that might go a long way toward suddenly a lot of men changing their opinions about abortion.
Yeah. And the blue pill, we now have a lot of AIDS.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very sad problem. Norma, thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be back with your calls and my news of the day. I got to tell you about this rocket engine. I mean, this it sounds wonky, but it's mind-boggling. Right after the news.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything Goes Friday. Okay, Wall Street worker. Wall Street, this is Sarah Lazarer, a staff writer for Common Dreams, wrote this piece over for that website. And the headline is Wall Street's Solution to Puerto Rico Debt Crisis, Shutter Schools, Fire Workers. Students from the University of Puerto Rico at Rio Piedras get ready to march to the governor's house to protest plans to cut the country's university budget. What's happening is that the bondholders, mostly hedge funds, you know, big billionaires out of New York, Puerto Rico can't pay their debts right now. And these bondholders are, going after them in a really, really significant way. Now, this raises an interesting question, which I don't think this article addresses. But you, those of you who have been regular and longtime listeners to this program will remember when I was talking about this back, 6 months or longer ago. I don't know, maybe you remember, Shano, that Puerto Rico had a tax loophole. If you wanted to relocate a factory from the United States to Puerto Rico, you didn't have to pay some types of tax. And I don't remember all the details of exactly which taxes they were, but I think that they were corporate income taxes on the profit you make with your manufacturing. And for that reason, a lot of companies, particularly big pharmaceutical companies, located factories in Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico was doing a lot of manufacturing for the United States. And, of course, manufacturing jobs tend to be good-paying jobs, and they build a middle class. And that middle class pays taxes. And those taxes allow Puerto Rico to repay its debts. So what happened over the last few years? Congress did away with that tax exemption for Puerto Rico. Now, you know, maybe the theory was they'll bring the factories back to the mainland. You know, maybe this was, you know, Louisiana supported it because they thought they'd get the factories there. But the reality is that those factories in Puerto Rico that the American companies were placing there so that they could sell things into the United States without duties, without tariffs, without any, you know, basically you're not importing into the United States if you're bringing in something from Puerto Rico because it's a U.S. protectorate. So you get the benefits of manufacturing in the United States, but you have a lower cost workforce, you have a lower cost of living, and you get these tax advantages. Well, Congress did away with the tax advantages. So what did the factories do? What did the fat cats do? They moved to South Vietnam, or they moved to Brunei, or they moved to Malaysia, or they moved to Indonesia, or they moved to China, or they moved to Mexico. I mean, they just got the hell out of Dodge. And now Puerto Rico is having an economic crisis. They're having an economic crisis because the middle class is being destroyed. Their middle class is being destroyed because these tax policies changed. Now, we refer to our trade policies. You've heard Bernie Sanders on this program talking for 10 years now about the, quote, insane trade policies that we pursue here in the United States. And you've heard me rant about it. And I wrote a chapter about it in my book, Rebooting the American Dream. Our trade policies are actually tax policies because they have to do with, you know, the whole most favored nation status thing, the whole NAFTA, CAFTA, SHAFTA, all that stuff. It's all about lowering import taxes. So it's tax policy. And as long as our tax policy is controlled, as long as our tax policy is absolutely controlled by the oligarchs, and you will recall Jimmy Carter, and by the way, that quote from Jimmy Carter is now starting to go viral on the internet. I mean, he came on this program, and I said, you know, what do you think is the consequences of Citizens United? And here is what a living former president of the United States had to say about the state of affairs in America today. Our Supreme Court has now said, you know, unlimited money in politics, it seems a violation of principles of democracy. In the minute or so we have left, your thoughts on that?
It violates the essence of what made America a great country in his political system. Now it's just an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery being the essence of getting the nominations for president or the elected president. And the same thing applies to governors and U.S. senators and Congress members. So now we've just seen a complete subversion of our political system as a payoff to major contributors who want and expect and sometimes get favors for themselves after the election's over.
There you go. You know, an oligarchy with a system of organized political bribery. That is now the United States of America. I mean, that is how bad it has gotten. So, anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday, so it should be your rants as much as my rants. Brent in Columbus, Ohio. Oh, Brent, hold on just a second. I kept teasing this rocket motor, and I just have to tell you about this. It's called an EM drive. It was invented 15 years ago by British inventor Roger Sawyer, and it uses solar power to generate multiple microwaves. This is from the piece by Sarah Napton, the science editor at The Telegraph. It uses solar power to generate multiple microwaves that move back and forth in an enclosed chamber. This means that until something fails or wears down, theoretically, the engine could keep running forever without the need for rocket fuel. And it produces enough thrust at enough speed that the drive is capable of producing thrust several times greater than even a photon rocket and could get to Mars within 70 days, to Pluto within 18 months. A trip to Alpha Centauri, which would take tens of thousands of years right now, could be done in just 100 years. And they've actually built a prototype of this thing, and it works. So we're talking about a possible major revolution in space travel. Just in time for the Republicans to destroy the Earth. Anyhow, Brent in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Brent, what's on your mind?
Oh, well, first, I guess the screen needs to update it. I'm actually in D.C.
Okay.
But more to the point, I have a problem with how we're not actually holding the appropriate people accountable or the party accountable. You keep going on Reaganomics and how Reagan and Bush destroyed the economy with tax policies and trade policies.
Correct.
But that's the purview of Congress. And for the majority of their terms, Congress was controlled by Democrats.
You're right. But it was not. These were not Democratic proposals. This is very much like, NAFTA, for example. When NAFTA was passed by Congress during the Bill Clinton administration, there were 30 Democrats who voted with all of the Republicans in the House of Representatives. 16 of those Democrats lost their seats in the next election because the Democratic Party was so horrified. But, yeah, you can have Democratic control of Congress, and you can still have Republican-based policies passed quite easily. All you've got to do is buy off 30, 40, Democrats in the House of Representatives and four or five senators in the Senate, and you got it. And that's exactly what happened, Brent. Go back and look at the individual votes on these policies. None of them were proposed by Democrats. All of them were opposed by Democrats. And it was a very, very small number of Democrats who voted for the Reagan tax cuts. A lot of Democrats fought them very vigorously. We go down the list, permanent normal trade relations with China, NAFTA, the WTO. These were all things. I mean, this is... We just had a couple of weeks ago with the Trade Promotion Authority. This was passed with what, fewer than 50 Democratic votes in the House of Representatives. You could say, oh yeah, you had a Democratic president; he's responsible for this. But it was the Republicans in Congress who pushed it through. I will give Obama his blame, but I'm sorry, Brent. That argument that the Democrats controlled Congress, therefore Reaganomics is a Democratic problem, it's not true. It's just not true. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's really astonishing, this whole let's reinvent Reagan movement and let's reinvent history, how effective the right is at that. Welcome back. William in Marin, Gowan, Louisiana. Am I saying that right, William?
Hey, Tom. Thank you. I wanted to see if I could encourage people to be foster parents or maybe think about adopting a child, because I went to church on Sunday, and Alice, she's an attorney, and she deals with that. She said there's so many LGBT children without homes right now that they took one and put him in a juvenile prison just because they didn't have a place for him.
Right.
Like at the orphanage or something.
Yeah. Let me take that a step further, William. I would say anybody who is an anti-abortion activist who has not adopted a child is a hypocrite.
Yeah, that's right, buddy. That's right. That's right.
Because, I mean, you know, unwanted children are a problem in society.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if all of these anti-abortion activists would instead start adopting, you know, kids, they would they'd probably reduce the number of abortions because people would know that there would be a place where their kids could go. For that matter, if they just supported birth control, you know, if you want to reduce the number of abortions, you should increase Planned Parenthood's budget, because Planned Parenthood is mostly providing birth control. But yeah, I'm with you. I've been a foster parent. Louise and I were foster parents. Then we ran a program for kids who couldn't make it in foster homes. We've never adopted, but we know people who have, and it's a wonderful thing. It's, you know, taking in kids who are not biologically yours and providing them with a home, it's a good and important thing. William, thank you for the call, and thanks for making that suggestion. It's a great one. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thank you, too. I have a technical question I hope you have some sound advice for. This has to do with what we've talked about several times, and I've advocated this over the past, three, 4 years at least. I'd like to figure out which is more efficient, to change the Democratic Party plank, or is maybe approaching one of the candidates, like Bernie, to get him to adopt this and talk about the idea of instituting a nationwide comprehensive psychological and educational inventory of all currently employed law enforcement, in addition to advocating your idea, which I like, of instituting insurance that individual patrolmen are responsible for in terms of penalties, like we pay for our automobile when we are reckless with our automobile.
Right.
How do we do this? Or maybe I should start off with getting a petition on the White House website.
That would be a good start. The other thing, Johnny, is the way that party platforms are written, the individual planks that go in the platform, they're written by the precinct committee people. So if you want the Democratic Party of Texas to adopt that as a party plank, join your local Democratic Party, run for the position of precinct committee person, and usually it's fairly easy to get in because they're always looking for volunteers. They're looking for people to do this. You don't get paid for it. In some places, you might get a stipend. And then you can actually write the party plank yourself. Now, you're going to have to talk your fellow, or at least 51% of your fellow precinct committee people involved, that it's a good idea. But I don't think it would be that hard to... Yeah, it's a great idea. I don't think it would be that hard to get that thing going. So that's the way to do it, Johnny. But the petition is a great idea. You've got some great ideas. Thank you very much for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. After the hour, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you and Jesse in Chicago. Hey, Jesse, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
Great show. Wanted to mention that, you know, now the Republicans have gotten their wish with the oligarchy. I would argue that the abortion activism is all part of their plan. I mean, if you think about it, that 1/10% would love to have nothing more than a larger, the middle class is gone, so a larger low-class, low-paid workers, almost slave labor, bringing back slave labor, because they want more people to have these, not have the abortions.
Hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, if anything that increases population decreases wages. It's one of the reasons why libertarians And in fact, Bernie was pushing back on this. Some Hispanic person said to Bernie in a venue in the last couple of days, why won't you support, Rand Paul and the libertarians call for an end to borders, just do away with the border between the United States and Mexico. And Bernie said that's a Koch brothers promoted idea, and it's just to produce more cheap labor in the United States and frankly in Mexico as well. And he said, if you can't control the size of your labor force, you can't control your economy. And he's absolutely right. Now, we've got to do something appropriate with the people who are already here, and we need comprehensive immigration reform for that. But we also need to say, okay, enough. This is our border, and until our labor force is tight enough that employers are desperately fumbling over each other to get and offering higher and higher wages to get workers, we don't need to add more labor to our labor force. And from your point of view, you're saying that one of the ways to add more people to the labor force is to prevent people from having abortions. I think that's a little more roundabout, and I do believe that much of the anti-abortion sentiment/movement is driven by people who are doing so out of a religious belief, typically Catholic, that abortion is wrong, that abortion is amoral. And to those people, I would say, I respect your religion. Please don't have an abortion.
Right. But it makes sense that they would latch on to that, that their activism, because it fits right in with their economic plan.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think that the economic one, though, is probably has more to do with immigration. I think that's one of the reasons why Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the employer penalties in 86 when he passed his amnesty. And he said, okay, we're not going to put any more employers in jail. From now on, it's only going to be the employees and in other words, the immigrants, and thus handed any employer in the United States who is willing to hire people here without documentation, willing to hire non-citizens, a giant club to threaten those non-citizens with. If you don't go along with what I say, even if what I'm saying is that, you're going to work for a buck an hour, or you're not going to get any wages this week, or you're going to have to shop at the company store, or you're going to have to provide personal services or even sexual services to the management, then I will call ICE on you, that kind of thing. And that was the weapon that Reagan handed to these employers, and they still hold it. They still hold it. And it's one of the reasons why, industries like meatpacking and construction that used to be good union wage jobs are not anymore. And it's not because, you can't blame this on the quote illegal immigrants. You have to blame this, if you want to blame anybody, on the Republican policies and the by and large Republican business owners who are exploiting those policies and exploiting people who are willing to come across the border looking for work. And
right.
it's just that simple. And I think that's a more rapid and direct piece of it. But the abortion piece, I really do think that most people who are opposed to abortion are being driven by religion rather than by economics. But your point is well taken. Jesse, thanks for the call. Excuse me. Wayne in Pompano Beach, Florida. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Yes, Tom. How you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
We hear a lot of talk about we want to take our country back, and I find that a lot of liberal progressives don't seem to really understand when these people say this, what they're talking about.
Right. And they mean I'm back to 1900.
Yeah, basically, I'm in the military business, and I go to gun shows and military shows, and about 98% of these guys are rabid right-wingers. And when they talk about taking their country back, they don't see any reason, if they want to smoke a cigar in an elevator, that they shouldn't be able to do it.
Right.
They don't see any reason that black people are on TV. In other words, these people are rabid. They're bigots. They're against basically everything that's happened in the last 40, 50, 60 years. And they want to go back to a time when white men ran everything.
Yeah. A simple way to boil down everything you're saying, and I could add a lot to your list, but a simple way to boil it all down is to say that they are basically advocates of white male supremacy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And the problem is if you try to chat with them about male supremacy, they don't get it.
Yeah. Or white supremacy or white privilege.
It's very convenient for them not to get it because they're the beneficiaries of it.
But they're not deep thinkers.
Yeah.
You know, you and I say, okay, if Planned Parenthood is put out of business, then the women that go to Planned Parenthood are not going to be able to get discounted birth control. Therefore, there are going to be more, chances are, more abortions. They don't look at it that way. They're not that bright. These guys basically say, well, if we make Planned Parenthood illegal, then women will stop having sex.
Right. Right. And you know, like I said, it's all about the control of women's bodies. And excellent point.
Now, one other thing.
Yeah.
When you talk about gun shows and the idea of background checks and gun shows are a bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
I was literally sitting there and a guy sold a Glock, 9mm Glock. And he wrote the guy's information on the back of an envelope and walked out of the gun show with this gun.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. The gun show loophole is one that definitely needs to be closed. Wayne, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to SiriusXM. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
With this new rocket drive, we could get to the moon in 4 hours. Is it time to seriously think about colonizing other planets? Welcome, Tom Hartman here with you. It is 28 minutes before the hour, and welcome to the place where despair is not an option. Okay, Kevin in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to point out with the abortion issue that the Republicans don't actually want to get rid of abortion. And the way you can tell this is they had both houses of Congress and the presidency for 6 years, and there was never a peep about abortion.
Right.
Because they, if they tried, there was no way to stop them. They would have gotten rid of it. And what they want is they want to keep it as a campaign issue.
Right. So the people want to pay attention to their economic policies because it's really all about the money. You know, the Koch brothers and the other big billionaires who fund and basically own the Republican Party don't give a rat's ass about abortion. But they want political power so that they can further destroy the American middle class and further enrich the billionaire class. And how do you do that? You get Americans all upset about something that's got nothing to do with economics. In this case, it's abortion. You know, there'll be something else. It's either abortions or guns or religion, typically, you know, or gay people. You know, they're losing the gay people thing. So, but they don't care about any of those things. They don't cost them money.
Part of why they hated Clinton was he cut welfare and crime plummeted. And those were two of their main campaign issues.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I'm sorry, Kevin, say that again.
Okay, I said part of the reason that the Republicans hated Clinton was because he cut welfare and crime plummeted.
Right.
And those were two of their main campaign issues.
Yeah.
Basically the greed and fear party.
Yeah. His cutting of welfare, by the way, again, that was another one of these policies that was done with a Republican majority, a Democratic minority, even though the Republicans controlled the House at the time. There was still a minority of Democrats who supported, you know, ending welfare as we know it, in quotes. And I'm pretty sure. And these are, so, you know, this is Republican policies. You get a few corporate Democrats, in this case Bill Clinton, one of them, to go along with. But you're, I think you're absolutely right that the Republicans don't actually want to get rid of abortion. They want to maintain it as a keep alive, keep frantic, keep going issue. Although it's going to be real interesting next year because it's probably coming before the Supreme Court. And whether the court's going to reverse Roe v. Wade or not, you know, time will tell. But I think with the current composition of the court, it won't because Anthony Kennedy is a supporter of Roe v. Wade. But, you know, who knows? Time will tell. Yeah, Kevin, thank you for the call. Tim in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Tim?
Doing well, thanks. Hey, thanks for what you do, and thanks for riding the prophet's wave. I called
because
I wanted to pass on to Senator Sanders a suggestion. Excuse me. And I fully believe if he can beat the Hillary money machine, that he'll get the Democratic nomination. But what I would like to suggest to him, and it might seem a little radical, I'd like for him to nominate Michelle Obama as his vice president running mate. I think it would bring a real balance to the White House and possibly give us the White House for the next 16 years.
Well, that's interesting. That would be really interesting.
She's already got the experience.
I had not considered that.
And she also has the female vote. Which
right.
Chew her in.
She's African American. She's female. You know, I was thinking Barbara Lee could do that too. You know, this is a decision that's up to Bernie and his people, not to us. But that's fascinating. Who should be Bernie's vice president? We've got this. Where did it go? The Sanders Warren 16 bumper sticker here sitting on our Bernie bear in the studio, and that's my dream ticket. You know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and there you've got a woman on the vote on the ticket. You don't have a person of color. You're right, but you know they're both people who are staunch advocates for people of color all across the United States. Tim, thanks for the call. And thanks for listening to KPHX in Phoenix. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Some observations about the Planned Parenthood smear.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I wanted to mention was that I don't think a lot of people realize that if Roe versus Wade were overturned, that would not outlaw abortion. That would put abortion as a matter of law back to the states. And
correct.
I think 30 states had legalized abortion before Roe versus Wade. And so all of the same kinds of issues of Planned Parenthood would be in those states, and they'd be smearing the states.
Yeah, I think it would actually exaggerate the red-blue state divide,
sure.
Which is already pretty dramatic, and in my opinion, leading us towards a non-firing civil war, essentially.
Sure, but. The point being that the federal government cannot compel any state to enact or repeal a law. So,
as long as that law exclusively operates within that state, you're correct.
Right, and the only caveat to that was that the Supreme Court could determine under the 14th Amendment that law was unconstitutional.
Correct.
The next thing is that Planned Parenthood. I can't think that they are selling body parts. Because they, for any sort of thing that could be considered profit, they are a nonprofit organization. I think the IRS would have something to say about that, just like nobody who handles organ donation, which costs a great deal of money. I think Dick Cheney's heart would be about $5 million. You know, you have to take a heart out of a dead person, someone who just died, and keep that heart alive. That costs a lot of money.
Right.
So this is to defer costs. But something I was thinking about here, the deeper smear is that the roots of Planned Parenthood, the foundation of Planned Parenthood was calling Margaret Sanger a eugenicist. And indeed, she was a negative eugenicist. But remember, in 1927, there was a Supreme Court case known as Buck versus Bell, where the state of Virginia was trying to force Carrie Buck, who was a developmentally disabled person, from becoming pregnant.
Right.
And the court upheld that law, that state law, by 8-1. This was the most conservative court I think we've ever. This is the William Howard Taft Court, probably the most conservative court ever in this nation, upheld that law. I started to think about that, negative eugenics, and I thought, well, wait a minute. I believe in that, too. I believe in that in my own lifetime. I got fixed when I was in my 20s, so I wouldn't pass along a genetically transmitted disease that causes blindness.
Hmm. Interesting.
And so I started to think about this, and I thought, well, do I really want the state to be telling people or be telling me, no, you can't have kids because you have this disease? No. But you see, since Buck versus Bell was never overturned, it never was. It's still a viable law. In other words, we could still have those kinds of laws, and the court, as of now, the court would say, yeah, if Virginia wanted to have a law like that, they could. But no states have those laws anymore. Because why? Because it's handled in the private sector by place organizations like Planned Parenthood. You see, it's just what the conservatives say they want. They want it. Don't have the big nanny state government telling you what to do. Let private organizations do it. And now when private organizations do it, they smear them.
Right. Right. And this, in my opinion, this all goes back to their wanting to have control over women.
Of course, over everyone. White males having control over everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly through economics, but in this case, women with regard to the control over their own bodies. Excellent points, and a lot of food for thought in that, Paul. I'm going to have to unpack that in my brain over the next day or so.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. It's always great to hear from you. Judy in Lewisburg, North Carolina. Hey, Judy, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I think the movie Serpico, which was based on a true story years and years ago, is a kind of telling what good cops are up against if they speak up. And this attitude...
Judy, I've never seen Serpico. Can you summarize it in a sentence or two?
It's with Al Pacino, and he's a good cop, and he does, he's just a very moral kind of person, and he goes in, and the whole force turns against him to the extent of where his life is in jeopardy.
Uh-huh, okay.
So he actually ended up leaving because of it.
Because he was willing to be a truth teller about police abuses.
Yeah, he did things the way they should be done, and everyone else didn't like it. He didn't go along to get along, and it really made everyone else mad.
Right. Okay.
And this attitude wouldn't exist if, it comes from the top down.
Yeah. In a way, Serpico, if it's as you describe it, it sounds like it almost could have been a warning to police officers: don't do what. Wasn't his name Frank Serpico? What Officer Serpico did? Don't do that because you will be drummed out of the force like he was.
I haven't seen Serpico in years and years, but it was an excellent movie,
yeah.
And it really. It's based on a true story. It was a long time ago, and
right.
Serpico.
But my point is that the morality story for civilians, for people who are not in the police department, is hey, it was a good cop who tried to do the right thing and ended up getting drummed out for it. From a police officer's point of view, though, it's the story about this is what would happen to me as a cop if I try to do the right thing. I will lose my job, so I guess I better not do the right thing.
Or they come after you to kill you.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And that might be why, for example, you got these two police officers after this Cincinnati campus cop, murdered this man, with his... I'm so bad with names. I got to get these names here. Anyhow, after the campus cop did it, the other two cops who showed up on the scene, wrote up reports that completely corroborated his lie about what had happened, that he'd been dragged, and one of them even said he'd witnessed it. When in fact they hadn't witnessed it and they were lying. And, without the body cams, we wouldn't even know. Interesting, Judy. Thank you for the call and thanks for the information.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm telling you, we got the smartest listeners on earth. I am so impressed with the people who are listening to and watching this program. We'll be right back. It's Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. Joseph in Floresville, Texas, watching us on Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite. Hey, Joseph, what's up?
Yes, sir. I just want to give you a couple of observations I've made. I was a person that was employed with a big corporation. I got laid off, lost all my retirement, basically thrown into the streets. I'll just say the name MCI WorldCom, and you should understand where I'm coming from.
Hmm.
But anyway, what I've learned to unravel is that human beings have not progress, they've been digressing for thousands of years. We used to have something innate in us that we understood, and we would understand things from our own perspective, our own innate perspective. We've turned into parrot monkeys, what I call parrot monkeys. I think I coined that phrase. In other words, all you know is what someone tells you and what you see.
Right.
Now, being a conscious individual, you should have something inside you that'll tell you what is right and wrong. I know when I was a child, I knew the difference between right and wrong from the earliest time I can remember. I remember doing something as a child, knowing in my mind, I can get away with this because you're going to say I'm too young. But everyone knows what's right and what's wrong. But because of the people around you that accept certain things, like these police officers, who are probably good individuals, but because of the situation they're in, it's like, do I want to keep my career that I've gone through the academy? Do I want to follow along? Doing the right thing is going to hurt me. So what we have to do is just remember that we all have the same innate ability. Now, as far as the economic situation that we have, and the word economic slavery is quite correct. When you were a slave owner in the old days, you had to buy your slave. You had to clothe your slave. You had to feed your slave. You had to house your slave. But he got sick. You had to get medical for that slave. Putting chains on a slave, someone fights chains. Your chains are in your minds now. That's where your chains are. They don't have to pay for your house, your clothes, your transportation. Yeah, you get to go home, but you better be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning to do what you're told to do, or you don't have a way of feeding your family. So it is an economic slavery. At the turn of the century, most people had their own property. They grew their own vegetables. They raised their own animals. And that's why we had a healthier state and we had what America was based upon, which is freedom. You don't have freedom when you have to be on a deadline on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we talk about freedom, freedom is there's not one indigenous culture that gave up their indigenous way of life willingly. Everyone was forced by some sort of, you know, whether it be the Romans, you know, people from Europe forgot where they came from.
Yeah.
The Romans came and took away your indigenous way of life, your Druids, your Wiccans, your...
Yeah, Jefferson wrote about that, the Whig histories. In fact, I bought one of those Whig histories to read it. I had to find an edition that was published in 1750 because they're no longer in print. But it was the history of the citizens of the British Isle before the Roman invasion who lived tribally.
Exactly. They did the same thing American did, or Indians did, but they forgot where they came from.
Right.
So...
They didn't just forget it. You know, when the Catholics came through, they banned it. They drove those memories out. And then the Romans came through and demanded the use of the language. The Catholics came through and demanded the use of the religion. Yeah. This is a huge topic, Joseph. And thanks for teeing it up. Good talking with you. And thank you for the call. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Up next, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Then back to Anything Goes Friday. Before the hour, the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, to find out what's going on today. Brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And Victoria Jones is on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So, I see you're at the White House.
Yes.
So, what's going on?
Well, very interesting. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz was in the briefing today to talk about the Iran deal.
Okay.
And I have to say, Tom, I never thought I'd meet a man or come across a man as brainy as you.
Really? Thank you.
And I have.
But he beats me by a mile. The guy's an actual nuclear physicist, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is so brainy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he make a compelling case or did he just sound too smart?
No, he made a very compelling case.
Okay.
For the Iran agreement. He really made a very compelling case. And it was very interesting to watch the front row ask one question each and shut up.
Hmm.
Because he'd answered the question.
Right.
They couldn't think of anything else to say.
In other words, he was not evasive. He was just very straightforward.
He answered the question and he answered it comprehensively and they couldn't find any way to argue with him. They realized there was no arguing. Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to be reported at any length in the corporate media or if they are just going to prefer to have this, it's the Republicans against the Democrats and the Republicans are taking Israel's side and the Democrats are not, and rah, 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 you know, this phony baloney debate.
I don't know. Or I don't know. Maybe they'll actually talk about the substance. I'm not sure. It was very interesting. I mean, and also I do think that because he was there and he was talking about substance, I think it upped everybody's game.
Yeah.
People also asked intelligent, because there are very intelligent people in that room.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of those reporters are very intelligent and people lower their game.
Yeah. I'm not a dumb person, but I play one on television.
Right. So they up their games.
Yeah.
I chose to ask a question. I wanted to ask a political question. And I asked, during your briefings on the Hill, when you were talking to lawmakers who opposed the deal, did any of the lawmakers who opposed the deal offer you a credible alternative?
And he said,
no.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
No, they didn't.
Of course. It's just like Obamacare, you know. They've got no credible alternative.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Then he talked about the unity of the P5. And how impressive that had been throughout the negotiations, and how it was in their interests to stick together, and how they would stick together now. And he talked about, you know, that they stuck together despite the fact that they had issues, you know, on other things. So he was very interesting.
Great.
On other issues, stories. Dylan Roof, the man accused of gunning down 9 African Americans inside a historic black church, told his lawyers that he plans to plead guilty to federal hate crime charges, according to attorney David Bruck, who told this federal judge that today. However, Bruck said that because federal officials haven't yet decided whether to seek a death sentence for some of these charges, he did not want to enter a guilty plea yet. As a result, the judge said he would enter a not guilty plea.
Interesting. If you enter a guilty plea, does that put you in line for the death penalty, or does that avoid the death penalty?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know.
And the other thing is, you know, there's a huge white supremacist contingent in prison. An awful lot of white prisoners join these white supremacist skinhead groups, just some of them because, you know, that's their sentiment. Some of them just because that's what you have to do to survive in prison. You know, you join the bully crowd. And he's probably, you know, when he goes to prison, he's probably going to be celebrated as a hero.
Oh, that's interesting.
So he might not, you know, if he's looking at spending the rest of his life in prison, and he's a young guy, and he's in his 20s, isn't he?
Yes, he's very young.
Yeah. So he might be thinking, or his lawyers might be thinking, in terms of the quality of life he's going to have in prison. And if he's stuck in with the general population, and he holds to a white supremacist point of view, He will be the star of the show in whatever jail he's put into, at least among the white guys.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton today made a break from top Republican presidential candidates. She called for the end of the U.S. embargo on Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
America's approach to Cuba is at a crossroads, she said in Miami, and the upcoming presidential election will determine whether we chart a new path forward or turn back to the old ways of the past. We must decide between engagement and embargo, between embracing fresh thinking and returning to Cold War deadlock.
You know, what I find interesting about that is I was watching that on MSNBC this morning, and they carried her riff at the Urban League Live and her comments about that, and they reported her comments about that. And then they just showed a little voiceover of Bernie Sanders and said, oh, by the way, Bernie's down there. Bernie was calling. There's an article about this in Politico today, actually. When Bernie was the mayor of Burlington, which was what, late 60s, early 70s, Bernie was calling for an end to the Cuban embargo and has consistently called for that in his 30 years in Congress. And nobody is mentioning that. Why not?
That's interesting. That's not being reported.
Yeah,
maybe
no.
Because it's the first time she's publicly come out and said it.
I guess.
Could be. Zimbabwe's environment minister today called for the extradition of Walter Palmer, the American dentist who killed Cecil the Lion, who was lured out of a national park and shot with a bow.
And then we learned from the big game hunting guide today that Walter Palmer, after he killed the lion, said, "Can I go kill an elephant now?"
Not just an elephant. He wanted a very big elephant with at least a 63-pound tusk. And the guide, who, by the way, have been charged with poaching, said, "I can't even find you an elephant that big." And that's when Palmer left and went home.
Amazing.
Where he's now in hiding.
Yeah.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife is looking for him, too.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
And the chief law enforcement officer with U.S. Fish and Wildlife said, who's put out a lot of alerts for him, said, oh, he knows how to get in touch with us because we prosecuted him in 2009 for lying.
Right, right. On a bear hunt, wasn't it?
Bear hunt.
Yeah. So this guy has already been busted before.
Yeah.
Amazing. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Always great talking with you. Have a wonderful weekend.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday. And meet the this is a great piece over at Mother Jones. 23 people have put in more than $1 million into Jeb Bush's campaign. Now, why would anybody put $1 million into a presidential campaign? Because it's an investment. You're buying something that you're going to get down the road. This Russ Shoma wrote this piece, Meet the Mega Donors Bankrolling Jeb Bush's Campaign. It's the Right to Rise Super PAC. Hillary Clinton made a comment about it this morning. You know, how can you have a right to rise when, you know, you don't want people to have Medicare? I mean, really? But 23 people gave more than $1 million. 23 people gave a total of $27 million, actually. But I don't think we know. Okay, among Bush's top donors are people with interest in some of the top foreign policy debates right now. Miguel Fernandez, a private equity executive who chipped in $3 million, was a refugee from Cuba. Bush has slammed President Obama's rapprochement with Castro's regime. Hushang Ansari was the Iranian ambassador to the U.S. before the Iran Revolution. He and his wife each donated $1 million. Bush has likewise opposed Obama's nuclear containment deal with Iran. Then you got T. Boone Pickens and Ray Hunt, the widow of Harold Simmons, a Dallas chemical magnate. Right. All the dirty money people. Let's get money to Jeb. You're giving it to the wrong guy. Scott Walker's going to be the Republican nominee. And it's going to be a really interesting year next year if Scott Walker is the Republican nominee and Bernie Sanders is the Democratic nominee. Interesting piece over in Salon right now about how, you know, they're basically terrified of Bernie. Fox News and the Wall Street Journal and the Republicans, they're really starting to ramp up this, oh, he's an extremist, he's a socialist, didn't you know? You know, when he was mayor of Burlington, he went to the Soviet Union for his honeymoon. Oh, my God, you know, it's like pull out your hair. It's starting. What was it Gandhi said? First, they ignore you, which they've been doing. I mean, you know, day before yesterday, we had the largest political event in the history of the United States, and it wasn't reported on any of the major media. First, they ignore you. Then they ridicule you. They've been doing that. I mean, even last night I was watching Rachel Maddow's show, and she was like, you know, Hillary Clinton beats the, you know, Jeb Bush beats Donald Trump beats it. And then it was Bernie Sanders, and even Bernie Sanders beats him, like dismissively, you know, even that crazy liberal. Really? So first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you. And then you win. And while I got an email this morning from Hillary's campaign from Cory Booker saying, would you please send us a dollar for one of those little credit cards? I also got an email from the Bernie campaign saying, we're going to take this thing all the way to November and we're going to win the White House. And here are the issues we're going to do it on. So we'll see how this all shakes out. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. Okay, Anything Goes Friday. First, I am a huge Bernie Sanders supporter. But if Hillary Clinton will send a person a supporter card for a $1 donation and mail it to a person through the mail, which I believe costs 47 cents nowadays, just wondering first, how much do you think it costs to create the plastic card, and second, added to the mailing cost, is Hillary actually losing money on a $1 donation for the production and sending of the card?
The answer is yes, but no. And here's how it works. The name of the game in political campaigns, and this is also the name of the game in nonprofit fundraising, which I've done a lot of throughout my life, you know, running the Community for Abused Kids and trying to help out Free Speech TV and some of our nonprofit affiliates. The name of the game is to build a base of committed donors that you can go back to over and over again. So if you send a dollar to the Clinton campaign and you get this credit card, And that actually might be a kind of cool deal, because my guess is that 30 years from now, those cards are going to be collector's items. But in any case, if you send a dollar to the Clinton campaign and you get one of these, credit card, one of these cards saying I'm a Clinton supporter, the Clinton campaign may have spent, a buck and a half or even $2 on producing that card, on reaching out to you, on producing the card, on mailing it to you and everything else. But they now know that you have the ability to contribute. And they may, I don't know if they do or not, but they may even keep your credit card number on file. So in the future, you can donate without having to re-enter it. And if so, then what will happen is, the next, because each one of us can give up to $2,700, I believe it is. It's either $2,400 or $2,700 is the maximum individual donation. You can tell I've never given that to anybody because I don't know the amount. But, Bernie so far has, asking for $3. He's got his average donation is in the neighborhood of $31, which means that all those over a half million people who have given Bernie an average of $31 all have the ability to not just double or triple that, but almost take it to an order of magnitude, almost multiply it by tenfold. If you give a dollar to the Clinton campaign, they can certainly, multiply that by more than tenfold, so they can keep coming back and coming back and coming back, which they will do. So it's a bet that they're making, which will almost certainly pay off, that if they can find out who are the people who actually care enough about Hillary Clinton's campaign or seeing Hillary as president to want to get one of these credit cards and give us a dollar, they're building a list. And as they get that list, then they will go back to those people over and over again and say, here are special events, here are special offers, here are special deals, because they know that those are the people who are more likely to send in more money. Make sense, Michael?
Yeah, totally. But Bernie's the man, and I just want to thank you, Tom, because I've gotten personally to speak to him 3 times because of your show. And that would never have happened without you. So thank you, Tom.
You're welcome, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for the call and your always thoughtful comments. Morris in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Yeah, Professor, you're a previous caller. I'm with him. The fact that you have access to Bernie Sanders, that's enough right there. But I want to say this. Mr. Sanders is the only voice in this country that could prevent a race riot. The Clinton name is a divisive name. When I think of Mr. Sanders, I think of healing. And you're a smart man, Professor, but even you would have to humble yourself to Noam Chomsky and Chris Hedges. But I just want to say also that Brad Freeman, pay attention to what Brad Freeman has to say. If Bernie should not win, it's going to be something electronic, like those voting machines. I like paper ballots, but they've got these voting machines out there, and no matter what the realistic vote count is, it could give you some fraudulent results. So part of Mr. Sanders' campaign should be, I want paper ballots, okay?
Yeah.
So,
well, he said that on this air many, many times over the last 10 years, that we should go to paper ballots.
We should get paper ballots.
Yeah. Yeah, and I totally agree. And in fact, I don't know if you know, Morris, but Chris Kobach, in fact, I've got the story right here. This is in the CJOnline.com, the Topeka Capital Journal. Wichita State mathematician sues Chris Kobach. He's the Secretary of State for Kansas. And Sedgwick County Elections Commission seeking to audit voting machines. Woman wants to investigate voting machines for voter fraud or demographic trend. It's an AP story from April 1st. And statistician, this professor of statistics at Wichita State University, has said there's no way that the Republicans won the election in Kansas. And the voting machines were rigged, essentially, or at least all the evidence is indicating that. So I think that, I think you're right, Morris. I think you're absolutely right. We'll see where this goes. Thanks a lot for the call. And yes, Bernie has made himself available to all of you. For 10 years now, every single Friday on this program. And I think that has caused a lot of people to say, this is an honest politician, which is supposed to be an oxymoron.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In the case of Bernie and the other roughly 100 members of the Progressive Caucus in the House and the Senate, people like Sherrod Brown, it's not an oxymoron. It's what's called statesmen and women. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Michelle in Baltimore. Hey, Michelle, what's up?
Hi, Tom. First-time caller, long-time listener, and definite Bernie supporter. However, I'm not calling about Senator Sanders today. I'm calling up concerning the ridiculous amount of police brutality that's going on in our country right now.
My husband and I were discussing it, and we think we came up with an idea that could expedite a turnaround in the situation, being that once there is a bad actor, we have two things that occur. One, the rest of the police do not turn him in. Two, the cities pay out settlements, sometimes in the millions of dollars.
Right, as in the case with Walter, or not Walter Scott, who's the fellow in Long Island?
In New York?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm here in Baltimore, and I know over a five-year period, we settled more than $5 million in settlements in our city. Here's my point. If the city keeps picking up the tab, and then the unions go ahead and fight the city mayors and DAs and whatnot to try to avoid being held responsible, I say we shift the responsibility of payouts over to the unions. Let them carry a huge insurance policy for liability, and it's not going to take long for good cops to get tired of bad cops tapping their wallets.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Put money into it. Money is, unfortunately, the one solution that actually gets, you know, gets ahead in the United States.
Yeah, it's quite literally the coin of the realm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's play with the money.
Yeah.
I'm tired of as a taxpayer, I get beat up and then I donate towards the settlement money I might collect.
Yeah. I think that we should have national licensure of police officers. There should be national standards for police, regardless of where they are. If they're going to carry a gun or any other kind of deadly weapon, they need to be licensed. And they should also be insured. There should also be liability insurance.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
The one problem with it being an individual policy that they have to carry,
mm-hmm.
I just wonder, considering how that's worked out in with doctors, with malpractice and whatnot.
I think it's done a pretty good job of keeping bad doctors out of practice.
Or just moving to another state.
Well, but the malpractice companies, the insurance companies have figured that one out. I mean, some doctors reach the point where they just can't afford the malpractice insurance anymore because they've had so many claims, and then they stop practicing medicine and go off and write books or, you know, do something else. And
become lobbyists.
Yeah, right. Go to work for the AMA. That would be interesting. It would be interesting to find out how many MDs are lobbyists for the AMA and other, you know, medicine-related, you know, pharma and stuff like that, and then go back and look at their malpractice claims and see if they're really the bottom of the barrel, you know, of the MDs. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating idea. Michelle, I agree with you. I think it's a great idea. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the internet at freespeech.org. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman program. Welcome back. And Michelle in Smithfield, North Carolina. Hey, Michael, I'm sorry. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great.
Hey, Tom, I heard that the MSNBC or Comcast, I think that's part of what NBC network.
Yeah, Comcast owns it, yeah.
Yeah, and well, I found out yesterday from the Ring of Fire, you know, from Mike on that they were gutting, you know, hurry up and canceling the Ed Show and then the cycle only because of TPP. You know, the Ed Show spoke against TPP. Why is that the corporations like Comcast has their pick?
Right. There's a lot of speculation about why Alex Witt and the cycle and Ed Schultz are being tossed off MSNBC. Alex Witt is going to continue in another capacity, but several and Ari Berman from the cycle will continue in another capacity, but the rest of them are basically all out, and including my friend Ed Schultz. And And Alex, oh, I said Alex Wagner. I said Alex Witt. It's Alex Wagner. Thank you, Shane. I don't think that we can say that we know why. My personal opinion is that those people were all too liberal for the network, and the network has decided that it's going to go corporate. And the people who are not being tossed off, I mean, Ed mentioned the TPP a whole bunch of times. Nobody else on MSNBC did. But it's not just the TPP. Ed has been really, really strong with labor, and nobody else on MSNBC will talk about labor unions. Ed has been very strong on net neutrality. And nobody else on MSNBC will talk about net neutrality. And if you want an issue that Comcast would want to get rid of Ed over, it would be net neutrality, because Comcast doesn't want net neutrality. They have it because they're forced to by a court order. So, or it's possible that it's just they had bad ratings and they think that if they put Chuck Todd on, you know, the most brilliant political analyst in America today, he says tongue in cheek. And maybe Brian Williams for a couple of hours doing a Wolf Blitzer kind of show, that it'll get better ratings. I mean, I can't honestly say that I know why, and I don't think anybody else can, other than Ed himself and the other people who got laid off, Michael. So I just can't speculate on it. I'd be willing to, more than willing to. In fact, I just did, but I honestly don't know, and I don't think any of us do. So it's, and it is a ratings driven business. I think that if MSNBC had successfully drawn a huge audience the way Fox does, that those guys would still be there because they'd be making money for Comcast. I may be wrong on this. It may be that Comcast's political agenda is more important to them than making money. But the two things that are preventing MSNBC, in my opinion, that are preventing MSNBC from being as successful as Fox are, number one, Fox gives their show away. You can get Fox for free. So Fox is on every cable network in the country, and everywhere you go, you get basic cable, you get Fox News. MSNBC is a premium channel. You have to pay. Here in D.C., we have to pay an extra $5 a month for it. And a lot of people cannot afford to or will not pay for premium channels. So MSNBC is only in a fraction of America's households, number one. So it can't get the kind of ratings that Fox does. And then secondly, Fox has Roger Ailes is a programming genius. He has positioned Fox as an outsider network. And to the point where you've got the RNC right now pulling their hair out because Fox is still supporting Donald Trump and putting him on the air, whereas the Wall Street Journal, which is also owned by Rupert Murdoch, is trashing Donald Trump. And the Republican Party is freaked out because Fox News, the outsiders, are basically now controlling the Republican agenda. And if MSNBC had positioned themselves as political outsiders, in other words, if they had become the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party, as basically one show on MSNBC did, which is the Ed Show. If the entire lineup, if the entire day had been like that, rather than having a hardcore right winger in the morning in the form of Joe Scarborough, and then kind of straight news in the midday with Thomas Roberts and whatnot, and then Democrat light in the evening, don't talk about trade, don't talk about net neutrality, don't talk about the TPP. Just talk about the issues that are safe to talk about, gay rights and police violence and things like that, things that don't hurt the billionaires, things that don't hurt the family that owns Comcast. If instead they had gone full Fox only on the left and were reaching out to the Democratic Party base and they dropped their premium status and went with basic cable all across the country, I think MSNBC would have absolutely kicked ass. And there's a great opportunity for that. And I hope that Free Speech TV over time can find the resources to be able to do that, because that is it's money laying on the ground, political opportunity laying on the ground. It's just there. There's a huge audience for a left wing Fox News, and nobody has provided it yet. So anyhow, Michael, thank you for the call. Elton in Lima, Ohio. Hey, Elton, you want to talk about Hillary's $1 card?
Right. There's a much bigger impact to that. I mean, she can make no money off of it, but what it's going to do, she has 100,000 donors. It will lower her average donation down to Bernie Sanders levels and make her much more
Right. I hadn't.
And then she won't have to explain her major donations.
Right. I hadn't considered that. But, yeah, her average donations are much, much higher than Bernie's. And so if she can get a whole bunch of new people to come in and just give $1, then she can say my average donor is now a $30 or $40 donor because the $1 donations will be balanced by the $500 donations or the $2,700 donations.
Yeah.
And
what's her total fundraising at this point?
Pardon?
You know, her total fundraising so far?
Right.
They had to release that. Do you know what that number is?
I thought it was $40
million. That's the number that I thought.
So yeah, and it's not so far. That's as of the beginning of last month, as I recall. But, Elvin, that's a brilliant observation. Thank you. Thank you for that. Boy, I'm telling you, we have the smartest viewers and listeners on Earth. It's just, I learned so much from you. Thank you. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program on Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Back with your calls after the break. Tom Hartman here with you. It is 28 minutes before the hour, and Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Well, I'd like to talk about space.
Sure.
And I believe that there's a new cosmic consciousness on the Earth. I think it's interplanetary, and it's an expanded consciousness. And it came to me when I was walking past a newsstand, and I saw a photo of Pluto, and there it was, picture of Pluto. And you know, before in our past, you know, the stars and the planets were just specks of light in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But now we see the actual planets, and of course we have our footprint on the moon, we have our rovers on Mars, we have pictures, close-ups of Jupiter and Saturn and the moons like Europa, and we're out there. I think that every time we get a picture like Pluto, which is the farthest out planet, that it expands. Our universal, our consciousness expands outward. There's more. It's very real now. It's not just, like I say, bright little spots in the sky. And I believe our future lies in space. And, you know, when birds get too big for their nest, it's fly or die. I think with our populations at 7 billion, ocean rises, our use of fossil fuels and CO2 and heating up the planet. It's important that we sort of get out there, and it teaches us things like on Venus, you have the greenhouse effect, but in its extreme where lead is liquid on the surface, and we'll realize that we're a small planet. And at the same time, many benefits exist, like solar energy. You know, we're looking to the sun to supply our energy instead of fossil fuels. So I think it'll also change our view of each other in case we encounter the real other. And there is a possibility, because I think the universe is teeming with life. And if we even look here on Earth at the extremophiles, life at the bottom of the ocean, when they drill cores into the Earth miles down, they find life that has nothing to do with the surface, doesn't need
right.
sunlight or oxygen or anything. It just lives off of acid and eats rock. So I think, and there's even life under the polar caps. They have these cryophiles, which are fish that their cells almost contain stuff like antifreeze. So I think in space that there's actually not just life on planets itself, but in space itself, and there's extremophiles that have adapted to space. And in fact, there's comets and meteorites that are made of water, so they have water. And I think that the universe is kind of teeming with life, and I think we're going to encounter the other, and that'll change our view of each other. I think we'll come to a new level of appreciation for and with each other. And so I think heading into space, space is the place.
Yeah, I agree, Harvey. And I think similarly, you know, when we first walked on the moon, which today would be unimaginable because the Republicans would be screaming, we can't pay for it. But Jack Kennedy said, yeah, we can. We've got a top income tax rate of 91%. We can certainly pay for it. But in any case, I think that was a moment for the world. I think the first pictures from outer space, actually, of the planet as a little blue marble, I think that changed the consciousness of our country. Then there's this larger issue of, is our individual personal human consciousness merely a resonant reflection of a larger universal consciousness? And to that, I would refer you to the to YouTube, plug into their search engine, Large Structures of the Universe, and take a look at something that looks very much like human brain tissue under a microscope slide. Harvey, you got to run, but thank you for the call. Kenneth in Curtistown, Hawaii. Hey, Kenneth, aloha.
Aloha. How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I just wanted to give a shout-out to Bob Kincaid, because without Bob, I would have never heard of you.
Okay.
And from the Horn.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask you, what really gives the cop the right to take a ticketed offense when the person is nonviolent to where they're using violence? You know, the cop is allowed to use violence when nothing's going on.
Right. The legally, they don't have that right, and that's why this cop in Cincinnati is in jail, or was in jail.
Eric Garner, that is so wrong.
Well, I think that, you know, the Eric Garner case, and I think that there have been a whole bunch of these that are very, very similar. You have grand juries that are impaneled for 6 months at a time, you know, plus or minus, and every single day they and the prosecuting attorney bring in local police officers who give them information and testimony that are absolutely essential to bring charges and then prosecute and then successfully prosecute criminals in the community. And when one of those cops then, you know, comes before the grand jury, this is somebody with whom they have a relationship. It's somebody who they know, they trust, they're more likely to believe. And so, you know, bad cops generally get a pass from grand juries and from prosecutors. And that's why we need to do what Wisconsin has done. Over the objections of Scott Walker, but it was a, you know, it was a citizens' initiative, which is develop independent police review boards that have nothing to do with the police department, nothing to do with the prosecutor's office, but do have the right, do have the power to subpoena witnesses, do have the power to compel testimony, and do have the power to fire or even imprison or recommend for prosecution police officers. We've got to change the way we deal with them. But, you know, Kenneth, in answer to your question, there's nothing that gives them that right. And they don't have that right, but the way the system is configured, they behave as if they do. And so functionally, you know, it's not a de jure, it's de facto. And that's an unfortunate reality that we've got to address. Kenneth, thanks for the call. Richard in driving through Salt Lake City, listening on SiriusXM. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, good day to you, Tom.
Thank you, Richard.
You know, I was listening to this stuff about these cards that Cory Booker's putting out there for Hillary. And it made me wonder if this is kind of like a way of positioning himself as a vice presidential candidate if Hillary gets the nod.
As Michael Keaton famously said in that movie about working on in a union shop, is a frog's butt watertight? I mean, yeah, of course, Cory Booker would love to be vice president. And frankly, I think he'd make a hell of a vice presidential candidate. He's way too conservative for me, as is Hillary Clinton, as a first choice. But he's a whole heck of a lot better, hell of a lot better than any Republican. So, sure. And he could bring along the African-American vote and the youth vote. And he's a young guy. He's good looking. He's really, really smart. He's got a great history. You know, I think Cory Booker, and in fact, the fact that the Clinton campaign was, you know, went to him and said, presumably, and said, you know, would you put your name on this thing? That tells me that they're thinking in those terms. And in fact, in the email, it even talks about people of color in the email. So I think this is a shout out. We'll see how it plays out. Richard, thanks for the call. John in Birchwood, Wisconsin. Hey, John, what's up?
Oh, not too much time. First of all, I think if you check, you'll find that that movie Serpico was based on a true story.
Yeah.
More importantly, we're hunters here in the northern part of the state. I completely disagree with what this guy did. But I'd like to remind people that it's hunters' money that really, you know, we create more habitat, do more to preserve endangered species than all of these other environmental groups combined do with the monies that we put towards it. And you know, we're not all like this guy. We're not bad people. You know, we're subsistence hunters up here. Just wanted to make the relationship. You know,
comment yesterday. You can make a case that if we just reintroduced wolves, we wouldn't be needing to thin deer populations, for example. But I don't have a problem with subsistence hunters. I think it is more ethical, frankly, than people who buy their meat in the supermarket. You know where it came from, and the animal at least had a period of liberty, and wasn't tortured its entire life like supermarket meat is. I get that. And I'm not sure that hunting organizations are putting more into conservation than anybody else. And certainly this big game hunting scam in the southern part of the African continent, that's not helping. The tourism is the big thing there, where people want to see the big exotic animals. But in principle, John, I'm not disagreeing with you. And I don't have a beef with hunters, even though it's something that I have no interest in personally. I got no problem with it. Okay?
Very good.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John. Thanks for the call. Chris and Darlene, and frankly, I think that, this kind of plays into the whole gun thing. It's like, we've got to, progressives and Democrats have to have a middle ground position politically. And I'm not saying that this is my position because of politics. It's my position because of the way I grew up. I have friends who I've lived near people who literally hunt deer because that's their winter's food. Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I guess a few weeks ago, a lady asked the question, why are white men so afraid of black men? And I got to thinking about it. And light bulb went off when I was watching a movie. And, one of the minor characters was a wife beater. And, they had guests, so the main character was a guest at the guy's house. And the woman spoke up. And then when the main character left, the guy beat her up saying, who's going to respect a man who can't control his wife?
Hmm.
And the ultimate control is your wife has your children.
Right.
Now, if she cheats on you with a white guy, those kids could pass as yours. But if that kid shows up with brown children, everybody knows your wife stepped out.
Yeah. Yeah. Fear is not even quite the right word because it's closer to hate. But that emotion of insecure white men around black men was exploited to the hilt in the 1920s and 30s with the whole reefer madness thing. Black men are going to get high and rape your women. And it's still a trope that is widely spread in the white racist community, in the white supremacist community. And it is an evil, evil, evil thing. Chris, thanks for the call. I think you're right.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls, my comments, the news of the day right here on Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman program. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. Thank you, Jashino. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, real quick, I think liberals already have a middle position on guns. I mean, background checks, banning these assault weapons and these multi-round, like 100-round drums and things like that. I think that's a middle position.
I absolutely agree, but the Democratic Party is afraid to even say that.
But with the position from the right is the one that's extreme.
Yes.
We have moved to the middle.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody wants to ban all guns. But what I called about was the thing about MSNBC. I don't think MSNBC is it's not ideologically driven. And I don't think there's some sort of nefarious corporate plot either. I think the people that run it or run the programming just panic whenever the ratings go down. They get rid of, programs. They have no kind of that's why people, they don't have the kind of, like Fox says, they have these people that just watch Fox. MSNBC doesn't have that because they don't have the loyal viewers, because MSNBC has changed its programming over and over again.
Right. And they don't program it like outsiders. They program it as insiders. It's all the people you see on MSNBC, with the exception of the Ed Show, are Democratic Party insiders. They're Democratic Party consultants. They're out of work Democratic politicians, the Harold Ford Juniors of the world, Conservadems, DLC Dems, and I don't think that those folks engender any passion at all. I mean, Chris Matthews going off on Bernie Sanders these days, It's like making me like, really? You know, it's kind of sad and sick. And
well, no, they have some like that. Chris Matthews drives me crazy. I can't stand him. But Rachel Maddow's not really an insider. I would say Lawrence O'Donnell is kind of an insider.
You know, Anita, I would agree with you if I had ever heard Rachel Maddow talk about net neutrality, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or trade, or international trade, the so-called free trade deals. But she has, to the best of my knowledge, completely avoided those issues, and at times that were extremely consequential. And those are the issues where the family that owns Comcast and NBC Universal and all the various corporations that are associated with it, those are the issues where they make money or lose money. And so she's free to talk about things that don't make her lose money, you know, abortion, gay rights, you know, those kind of things. But I think that, you know, as much as I love and respect Rachel, and I do, and I know her personally, or sorta, I've hung out with her in the past, I still think that she's playing the role of an insider at MSNBC.
Well, I can't agree with you on that.
She does a great job. I love her show. But there are lines that she won't cross that Ed crossed and Ed's out.
Well, I think it also it depends on their ratings. I don't think that when they talk about TPP, when they talk about even climate change, ratings go down. Unfortunately,
I don't think so. I think if they were to program that network the way Fox does, program it to the base, their ratings would go up. There's a huge Democratic base out there, a huge progressive base. But, you know, neither one of us actually knows, Anita, so we're both speculating, and here we are disagreeing about our speculations. I don't disagree with you, though, that it's all about the money. You know, the ratings go down, the revenue goes down, because you can't charge as much for your advertising. So the big challenge for them, if they want the network to make money, is to get the ratings up. Anita, thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Nate Sweet and Troy Miller, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, all the groups that syndicate this program, Westwood One on commercial radio, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial, Sirius XM satellite radio all across the United States, cable radio network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable all over the country, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio, to our newsletter editor Sue Nethercutt and the folks in the chat room. Hey, how are you? To Alan Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you, especially to you, for supporting our program. Thank you. Caden in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Hey, Caden, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm actually I'm watching your show online right now. I was at a Bernie Sanders thing the other night. I actually saw somebody talking earlier about police reform, some issues with the police force and stuff, and I wanted to go ahead and chime in on that. There's definitely, I think there's a big issue going on right now. One of the biggest things that I feel is very important to touch on is the fact that, like, some of the people who get drawn to becoming a police officer, the not only just the people who thankfully are those who actually want to do good, but those who tend to have the authoritarian personality or the ones who feel that they can be forceful and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes difficult to see this huge police force throughout the entire United States and say the entire thing's working, because it's not.
No.
And I think one of the biggest things that we have to start working towards is getting more structure going on between all these different different places throughout the United States, because there's so much. It's such a big place.
Mm-hmm.
That you've got rural versus urban. You got all these different kinds of things going on, and it's got to boil down to what are the bare minimums, what's the training that you're doing, what are the people that you're letting in, because obviously I don't think that we're getting enough people into the police force that are actually intending such pure thoughts.
Yeah.
Being able
to standards, hiring standards, and now that the Supreme Court has said that police forces can constitutionally refuse to hire smart people, and they do. They give IQ tests. Many of these police forces give IQ tests, and if your IQ is even slightly above average, they will not hire you. And this is a problem. We the standards that we have for policing in this country are pretty much non-existent. And we need national standards. The accountability that we have is largely non-existent. And then on top of that, we've got a whole bunch of military-industrial complex groups that are taking federal dollars to pour hundreds of millions of dollars worth of military equipment into police departments and militarize these guys, putting them in the mindset of occupying armies rather than serve and protect. So there's a lot of work we got to do. And Caden, I think you've identified a bunch of it. Thank you for the call, and thanks for watching on live stream. Bill in Santa Maria, California. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom, this is Bill from the Bill and Soon team. We met you a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. You guys sail around the world on a sailboat, and you drop by our marina.
Yeah, that was a very pleasant visit, Tom. I'm a big supporter of 99% of what you say. Let me just say, my big thing is nuclear power. I've just looked at it very carefully. We got Diablo Canyon here. We're in a crunch. California is out of water because of the drought, because of climate change, and we got no solution. 39 million people, $2 trillion economy, and we got the governor sucking his thumb. He doesn't know what to do. Global warming is so threatening. We've got the nuclear navy for 65 years. Nobody has been injured. Nobody's been killed. It's been totally safe.
No, not true, Bill.
100,000. Well,
it's not true.
I'd like to know your statistics, but 100,000.
Well, just consider the people who have died mining uranium. The communities down river from the uranium mines that have been contaminated. Their water has been contaminated with radioactive waste. The arsenic and other compounds that also come out of uranium mining that nuclear reactors don't exist in a vacuum. It takes about 10 years of a nuclear reactor running before it produces its first kilowatt of carbon dioxide free energy. There's an enormous amount of fossil fuel used to mine.
You got to compare it with coal and oil and all the other.
No, you have to compare it with solar and wind. If you want to call nuclear power an alternative energy source, compare it with solar and wind. And solar and wind.
Solar is 0.4%, not even 1% after 30 years of subsidy.
Here in the United States, solar power generated 74% of the electricity used in Germany the day before yesterday.
Yeah, for one.
And California has a hell of a lot more sun than Germany does.
Tom, I beg you to look more carefully at this. Just do that for me.
Bill, I have.
Do a little more study.
I have.
You're
respectfully
a tremendously smart guy.
You're wrong and I'm right. I'm telling you, Bill.
Tom.
I'm sorry. We're going to have to agree to disagree on this. Let's not let it destroy our friendship. Bill, I got to move along. Thank you for the call and give my best to soon. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Jeff? Bob in Bullhead City, Arizona. Bob, we got about a minute left.
Yeah, bro.
20 seconds left.
Yeah, Tom. I haven't heard a lot in your program about the police department. They are actually a...
You want to call them a paramilitary force? Or? Oh, did he? Oh, okay. My apologies to anybody who heard Bill use the use an expletive. Okay, all right. Anyway... It's the end of the show. Thanks so much for being with us today, all this week. We'll be back next week. We'll be back on Monday. And don't forget, in the meantime, democracy really, really, really requires people, not just money. In fact, not money. People. And that's you and me. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.